Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Today, we're continuing with our classroom, our psychology classroom. A short while ago, Lisa Arnone, my apprentice, assistant, and therapist in her own right, was asking me some questions about therapy and about styles and about thinking and about feelings. And as I was answering them, she said, wouldn't it be great if the audience could hear this? And I thought, well, probably it's too technical for the audience, but I never speak in that too technical a way. So we thought we would continue our classroom and let you hear what we say in the privacy of our own training. And we're going to start that off today with understanding people and then understanding how people change. That's the question. Lisa, welcome back.
Thank you, Armand. Glad to be here.
Exciting adventure, isn't it?
It is. I am enjoying it. It's supervision on the air.
Nice idea.
Yeah.
Nice idea. So one of the questions, let's talk about thinking style. This is kind of important, Lisa. If you think about everybody, everyone could be broken into one of four categories, and everybody likes categories. How you approach the material world, that's very important. How do you deal with the physical world? How do you deal with machines and with toys and with things like that? And then how do you deal with the non-material world? And the non-material world is thoughts, feelings, imagination, the non-material world. So we have the material world and the non-material world. And why is that important? Because believe it or not, almost everyone fits into a certain category around these issues. Let's start with the material world. How do you approach the material world? Do you line up the ducks and say there is a sequence to the world? Step A, follow step B, follow step C. If you see a car coming down the road, that means that it must be a green light, and that means that the traffic is flowing smoothly, and that means it goes at a certain pace, and there's a sequence to life. A sequence. Each 1 year follows the next. You get a little older. You get a little older. The sequencing is of concrete elements. So if you're a bookkeeper, for example, that's perfect. Bookkeepers are perfect people who put the sequence in order, right? They numerically assign things and they could line up the ducks. Some people are so intent on putting the world in order that they just focus on getting everything in order all the time. If you mess up their desk, they say, what's this doing here? What's this there? Right? Okay. This is called concrete sequential thinking. Concrete sequential means you take the concrete world and you put it in sequence. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So we have the concrete world in sequence. Yes. Right. That's a CS. Concrete sequential. Now, how else could you approach the world? Well, let's say you're a creative type. You look at the concrete world, and you say, well, the concrete world could be this way now, but it could change in 5 minutes. And so you could see it randomly. You take a look at the concrete world, and you say it's not necessarily in order. So a very creative mind, like the guy who created Facebook or the guy who created Steve Jobs, these are not concrete sequentials because they didn't just take what is and align it. They went outside the box and they created beyond what was known. So being able to create beyond the concrete sequential, it's called a concrete random. So now we have two ways of approaching the concrete world. Either you do it sequentially or you do it randomly. The world tends to admire the sequences, the sequencers. The world says all you have to do is go to school, study this course, do this thing, step one, step two, step three, step four. That's what the world teaches. They are not used to the fact that, you know, a person is random. They don't like it, thinking outside the box. They don't really like creative people. The world is built for order, and it says put things in order. However, without the concrete random, the world would get stymied. You need the concrete random. Albert Einstein was a concrete random. He was able to... Actually, there's a joke about Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein was known for his love of children as well, but one day he was laying down a cement walk outside his house. And the children came along, and they wanted to jump in and write their names in the cement walk, and he shooed them away with a loud voice, and his wife comes out and says, "Albert, Albert, how could you be so rough on those children?" And he said, "I like children in the abstract, but not in the concrete." I don't think that really happened. So concrete random means I take whatever is material and I can flip it any way you want. So the real creative people, the real creative thinkers, that's what they're doing. Right? Meanwhile, you, without the people to put it in sequence, you have no success. So I can think of 100 different people who I've met in my life who are sequential thinkers. They could, concrete random thinkers. They have ideas after ideas after ideas. They come up with creative ideas, but unless you could put it in order, you cannot succeed. Unless you have concrete sequential, you can't succeed. So the perfect partners are a concrete random with a concrete sequential. You think of the ideas, I'll line it up for you. Okay? Of course, what happens is a concrete random says to the concrete sequential, "You're being too tight, you have to loosen up." And the concrete sequential is saying, "No, you have to tighten up a little bit." So there's an argument that usually ensues between the two, and it really is not necessary because the two of them do collaborate and work with each other. Now, I will say that we're going to talk about four characteristics, and every one of us as people have at least all four of these to different degrees or others. Sometimes you're weighted far more in one than another. So ideally, you would have all four qualities we've talked about two so far at about 25% each. When you're highly weighted in the concrete sequential, meaning around a 35%, a 45%, a 50%, then that means you're probably obsessive compulsive. It probably means you can't get away from order. When you're heavily weighted in the concrete random, it means you can't hold a job because you can't go back to work day after day and keep doing that. So we now have how people deal with the material world. The next issue we want to understand is how people deal with the non-material world. This is Armand DeMille, by the way, with Lisa Arnone, and we are working on trying to teach you what it is that we know and see as therapists, and with reviewing as well as teaching at the same time, and I'm hoping that you're going to enjoy this. In the non-material world, that's the world of philosophy, psychology, religion, astrology, you know, all of these things that you can't weigh, you can't bite. Right? How do you see it? Well, some people take the non-material world and they decide to line it up. This is very true of astrology. Astrology says, well, the reason that this exists is because this exists. Because your moon was in your Taurus, you had this conjunction with Venus, and therefore you were feeling bad that day. See? It's a sequence. You're showing a sequence of belief. Or Freudians. Because when you were a little child, you had the sexual feelings towards your parakeet, and that wound up inhibiting you later in life, so on and so forth. Sequence. Always sequence. There's a belief that the emotional reactions are a sequence, that they're created by something, and then they're sequenced into something else. And so a lot of the all teachers, all history professors, almost every professor you ever meet in a school is an abstract sequential thinker. They take the abstract world and they put it in sequence, otherwise they couldn't teach it. Philosophy teaches abstract sequentials. We're going to have to go back to the qualities of the abstract sequentials in a couple of minutes. Let's go back with the last one of the abstract world, and there are the abstract randoms. Now, the abstract random says emotions, thoughts, feelings, they all flow into each other, and there is no sequence. So an abstract sequential would be a flower child. They would be, you know, well, there is, it's just flowing down the stream, just go with the flow. There is no direction. If you were very highly abstract random, I mean, if you were one of those go with the flow people, you would have a difficulty in life because everybody's going to be looking for you to be dependable about something. But you see the world is flowing, so you don't respect time, you don't respect anything. You're just basically saying everything moves. So if you have a very high abstract sequential, you're probably a very nervous person. You're probably a person who gets easily touched by things. You probably are very sensitive. You probably find emotions creeping up out of nowhere. That's abstract sequential. Abstract random, I'm sorry. That's the randomness. The sequential understands all the emotions. They say, this is caused by this, this is caused by this, this is caused by this. There is nothing more infuriating than being with somebody who's an abstract sequential when you have an emotion. Because they're always telling you where it comes from. And they're giving you, they're lining it up. And the thing that you want when you feel deeply emotional is you don't want somebody to explain where it comes from. You want somebody to hold you and say, I'm so sorry you feel that way. But what most people do is they go to someone who is dispassionate, who then lines it up. So now you have to understand, each of you, if you're an abstract sequential, an abstract random, that makes sense now, which of these two we're talking about?
Yes.
The abstract world, sequential or random, concrete world, sequential or random. Let's do it again. Concrete sequential. That's a person who sees the world, the concrete world, the material world, and lines it up. Concrete random. That sees the world and says the world is movable and shakable. Abstract sequential, I take the emotional and the philosophical world and I make sense out of it. Abstract random, nothing makes any sense. Everything is in a flow and that's the way it is. Now, which of these four, Lisa, would you say dominates? Not it is, it's like overwhelming, but which way dominates in you? One or two? Let's say in the concrete, would you say you're more a sequential or a random thinker?
Random.
Random, right?
Random, yeah.
So random would mean you have a flexible mind. However, I have seen you become highly ordered at times. So when you need to be, you line things up and you get them done, right?
Yes.
Therefore, you probably have something like a concrete random of 28 and a concrete sequential of something like 24. It's well within the range of that 25%.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where there are many people who have concrete sequential of 35. And concrete random, which is like something like a 15. So they have a low tolerance for things being out of order, and they have a strong desire to put everything in order. Talk about that quality for just a moment. This is going to sound like it's off on the side. All animals, this should be a poster. You know, this should be one of our quotes, Lisa. All animals under stress will try to organize. When you stress any animal, any human, any plant, it tries to organize. For example, if you tie up a flower, it reaches up for the sun with its neck. It tries to organize itself in the direction. We all tend to organize. So one of the things that you could see as a true expression of somebody's stress is their need to organize. A concrete sequential person, a person who is an obsessive compulsive, it's not interchangeable, but at its extreme it is. When a person is compulsive and they've got to do things over and over again and they must repeat themselves, those people are they are under stress and they feel stress. Give them more stress and they will tend to organize. You give the loosest person, if you had a field of people who were all flower children and they were all going around dancing and doing drugs and having a good time in Woodstock, and suddenly it rains, they become sequential. Let's find some place to hide. Let's get a hut that we can go to. Not all of them. Some of them do, according to how good the drugs are, right? Give me more marijuana and I'll boom. I don't need it. But there's always a tendency under stress to organize. So the organizer and the organizing person is someone who is seen almost as the safety net. That's daddy always came home at 5 o'clock. Daddy always did this. There's an organized one. And we see that as an ideal, but it's also an indication of a stress reaction when somebody aims in that direction, number one. Now that's the concrete sequential. Now I want to talk about the abstract sequential. The abstract sequential, which is the person who takes things like love, emotions, and stuff like that, and tries to make sense out of it. They're going to make sense. They're going to tell you, well, you fall in love when the person you meet matches this and it has this quality, and that's what makes for love. Or, emotions are all explainable. The reason that she was upset because you did this and you did that and so on and so forth. The abstract sequential person, the person who is always trying to put the abstract world into sequence, is in terrible shape because the people don't want to hear them do it. They're always trying to make sense out of things, and the trouble is they're tortured. They are tortured trying to make sense out of things. So here goes the real problem with it. The real problem with it is these people are rarely, abstract sequential people, are rarely successful. Yeah, Lisa.
Random. I think you mean random, right?
No, abstract sequential well. I'll tell you why. Okay. I did say that. Abstract randoms, you're right, are rarely successful because they're all over the place. But abstract sequentials are rarely successful. Here's the reason why. Concrete sequentials, they can line up the ducks. And they could get to a certain point of success, but then they have no real creativity. So they could only go to the top of whatever they're limited to. Abstract sequentials are people who are trying to make a decision all the time, and here's the way they think. So, I will tell people that when you first come in here to the DeMel Center, one of the things we do is we give you a short word test. And this word test gives you kind of designates where you stand on this abstract sequential, concrete sequential thing that we're talking about. One of the things we know about abstract sequentials is that they can never make a decision. See, they are so filled with thoughts and their minds work the following way. They don't have the abstract random, the person who's got an abstract, who takes the abstract world and tries to, it goes everywhere. That's one thing. That's like a shotgun. But the abstract sequential's thinking is like the thinking of a tree. You know, an example of it is a tree. They have a thought. I think I'll go out. And then the thought splits into two paths. It's only two. Well, I think I'll go outside. I'll go to the store. Or I think I'll go to the gym. Now we're on two thoughts. Then they take one of the legs of those two thoughts. If I go to the store, I'm either going to go to Safeway or I'm going to go to Trader Joe's, right? And then they take the next thought. if I go to Trader Joe's, I'm going to go upstairs or I'm going to go downstairs. And if I go downstairs, I'm either going to go to the left or I'm going to go to the right. Now, this is, if you look at this and you look at the way, if you did this with a pencil, you would see branches on a tree growing. But it's always two. It's not random. It looks random, but it's not. It's always two choices. So if you ask someone, there's a blue house and a red house, which one should I buy? They're like stuck with this because they always have these two choices that they're trying to figure. Well, the blue one would have this, and then it would have that, and then again, sequence and sequence. Whereas the abstract random, when they think five things at once. So it's a real difference. The abstract sequential cannot make decisions. They're notoriously indecisive. The result of their notorious indecisiveness is you can't get them to make a decision. You ask them, what would you like? Go to a restaurant. I have a good friend who's a abstract sequential. We go to a restaurant. We can be finished our meal by the time he selects his first entree because he's thinking, which will I be? How will this be? What will this taste like? And then at the end of a meal, that's the abstract sequential I'm talking about. By the end of a meal, the abstract sequential who is trying to make a decision, always the problem is decision, about the meal, by the end of the meal, we could have all finished our meal and we're ready to, and he hasn't even started eating yet. Because again, it's decision, decision, decision. And in fact, when you're with an abstract sequential out to dinner, and somebody offers to take their plate, they always fight off the waiter, and they say, oh, no, no, not yet, not yet. Plates could be closing, and they still want their plate because they want to select what they're going to select. Now, the problem with the abstract sequential is that their mind is plagued with these choices, and so they're very, very difficult, and they're very difficult especially in psychotherapy. Psychotherapy is difficult for them because no matter what you say to them, they're going to have an alternative. If you understand that you're dealing with somebody who has an abstract sequential mind, you don't ask them to make choices. The average therapist makes the mistake. Now, here, Lisa, is where you've seen my disrespect for a lot of the ways that therapists work. If you have somebody who's an abstract sequential, you do not say to them, you must make a choice. You understand that they don't make choices. If you're saying to somebody, you must make a choice and they're an abstract sequential, then you're a poor therapist because this is not how their mind works. They cannot. In fact, one of the things that the abstract sequential does is they have a tremendous respect for authority. Why? Because they depend on authority. Because they depend on somebody telling them what direction to go in. And the more authority you have, the more they believe you and they try to follow your path because they can't make the decision themselves. So part of why this styles of thinking is so important is if you're a therapist and you see somebody who's an abstract sequential, you're going to treat them one way. If you see somebody who's a concrete sequential, you treat them another way. If you see somebody who's a concrete random, you treat them a third way. And if you see somebody who's an abstract sequential, you treat them a fourth way. Now, I know this sounds silly because you say, nah, I basically treat everybody the same. But I'm saying that's poor therapy. If you treat everybody the same, would you treat everybody with a different culture the same? If a person came from the Deep South, would you treat him the same as somebody who came from Norway? Or would you consider there are going to be different effects here and different results and different factors involved here? In the working of the mind, in the styles of thinking between the concrete sequential, the concrete random, the abstract sequential, and the abstract random, you have four styles of thinking, all of which have to be approached differently. If I know that I am having a session with somebody who's an abstract sequential, and it's 5 minutes before the end of an hour, And I know I'm going to be kind of putting this all together because somebody's going to be waiting for me. I do not ask them at 5 minutes before the hour a question because their answer is going to take forever. And the worst thing you could do is let somebody out of the room without the blackboard of all these questions in their mind being able to empty. One of the things you can do with somebody who's an abstract sequential is make contact with them, is to make a real contact. So in other words, just by being with them, just by understanding them, and just by showing them a real contact, they slow down their minds. Because abstract sequential is about danger. It's like I'm trying to find a safe place. So I'm thinking about this and thinking about that, and what's dangerous, what's not right, what's not right, what's not right. It's not a happy place. It's never the choice between two happinesses. It's always the choice between two problems. So as therapists, one of the things that we try to do is to understand the style of the client. And then, through our own knowledge of those styles, we work with that client. But we must keep the style in mind. As supervisor, I have so often had somebody come in and say, I want to discuss this client with you. And I say, what's their style? And the therapist will go, oh, I'm not sure. Well, I know what the problem is right there. You don't know the style of your patient. If you don't know the thinking style of your patient, of course you're having trouble with your patient. So it becomes something that we don't write it on the outside of the file, but I think it should be imprinted. Maybe that's a good idea. Write it on the outside of the file. Not that everybody is so much. Now, what if you got somebody who was a 25, 25, 25, 25? What would they be like? That would be a very good airline person, you know, like an airline steward or something, because they are balanced. They get along with everybody. See, they have an equal balance the whole way. They could be organized. They could be random. They could be emotional. They could be, you know, any understanding. So it's like an equal balance. But when you're going in any one direction much more than the others, then that usually shows a style of difficulty. As you get older, as you get more mature, your mind tends to organize a little more if you're disorganized. As you get more mature, if you're overorganized, you tend to loosen up a little bit. You tend to loosen up your balance. Now, Lisa, we got about 3 minutes before we take a break. Does this make sense?
Yes, it makes sense. I'm wondering when you're talking about, well, the therapist has a style and the patient has a style. So would it be a good idea to match up therapists and patients, and how is that balanced?
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. It's what I do. It's exactly what I do. What I look at when I see somebody is to say, to myself, how would that person's style match up with that therapist's style, which is why people tend to see me first before they see anybody else. So if somebody called us and said to us, you know, hey, I need a therapist, I can always point out a therapist. But if I get a chance to see them myself, then I get a chance to see their thinking style. And then I think about how the collaboration between them and another therapist is going to work as far as thinking style goes. Bill Astwood did a brilliant, brilliant test of who works best with who, which I think I'll tell you when we get back from our break. It was really kind of, he did it for his PhD dissertation. That's Dr. William Astwood, who works with me. It was brilliant. It was brilliant. When we get back, we're going to take a short break. And when we get back, my friends, we're going to talk more about thinking styles and the process of psychotherapy, what it is, how it works, how it's supposed to work, and how it doesn't work. We'll be right back. Thank you. Breezin'. Such a nice thing, don't you think? Real George Benson. Haven't heard that in so long, I thought it would be fun for you to hear. Relax your brain, you know. It's trouble with teaching. Trouble with teaching, and it's hard to keep following things. How do you follow it like this whole confusion about the abstract sequential and the abstract random? Concrete sequential, concrete random. Very difficult. Very difficult to follow. However, once you learn it, it's really valuable. So when you're with this, what you get is you get somebody who, of course, you get a concrete random and an abstract random. Mind you, your scores can both be high in the random category. So you could be somebody who comes in and you look like you're wearing a tie-dye skirt and you're, you know, and you've got your hair all over the place and you got ribbons and bows and you're very colorful and you're very spiritual. And so you walk in with a nice, airy, fairy, beautiful world, positive attitude. And so now we have a concrete random and an abstract random. There's nothing you could hold on to. Now, we all know people like this. And you say how wonderful it is to be so free. But the problem with the randomness is there's nothing you could hold down. There's no solid place. There's usually no money in the bank because if there's money in the bank, they say, well, just give it away. You know, it belongs with somebody else. We'll have to pass it on. There's no savings. There's no 401k. There's no keep a job. Life is to be lived and life is short and there's all kinds of things that they say about why they should not stand still and go to school and get an education and get completed. So this kind of random life is a beautiful life. But it's a childlike life. It's a fine childlike life. As you get older, as you become an adult, you begin to realize that there are things that are worth putting in order because it frees you. There's a maturity that goes with organization that is freeing in some way. But how do you get somebody to get to that point? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. If you just tuned in, we are talking about styles of thinking, the different styles of thinking. And I'm talking about this with Lisa Arnone, who is a therapist who is under my supervision. And so we have been talking privately. And Lisa, who also co-hosts this program with me and helps me organize the program, said we should talk about this on the air because you just don't hear this kind of stuff out there. You know, these are the secrets of the doctors. These are the things that they use to communicate with each other. And I'd like you to know all our secrets. So what question does it bring to you, Lisa?
Well, I was thinking when you were talking about the abstract sequential, about what it's like as a therapist to sit with someone who has a hard time making decisions.
Absolutely.
And how restless I start to feel when I'm sitting with someone like that, because I want to help them make a decision, but I know I can't help them make a decision. And so I'm curious about what you would do with someone like that.
Hit him in the head with a frying pan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, truth of it is, see, part of therapy was believing that people could make wise choices. And therefore, you have to encourage somebody that part of what therapy is helping a person build the strength so that they can make their own decisions. That if they didn't have the ability to make decisions, you as a therapist help them build the strength to make decisions, to make them have confidence in themselves. So the approach is to understand that you're going to nurture this self-strength rather than decision-making. And that's a different thing. And so what I would do with someone like this is I would always say, yes, decision making is quite a difficulty for you. we understand. And I would not break down the decisions and try to help them make a decision. I would acknowledge the fact that this is always an area of problem, a problem area for them, and that it must feel bad that they feel this way, and then I would kind of, you know, more or less embrace them as they are without the decisions. Why would a therapist want to have a patient make a decision? Why? Think about it. Why? So let's take a classic example of a patient who says, well, I don't know if I should move to Philadelphia or I should stay in New York. Therapist now has a belief. The therapist wants to convince that person that they should stay and work on themselves to be stronger before they move to Philadelphia, right? The therapist's investment is also that the therapist needs this client for the therapist's income. So now the therapist has got a mixed motive in this decision-making thing. The therapist wants the client to stay because the therapist wants to earn the money from keeping the client here. So the therapist therefore says you must make a commitment to yourself. And these phony words mean you must stay here and keep paying me. It becomes a difficulty. Because the client, who we're really trying to help in many ways have a belief in themselves, would be so much better off if we could say something like, well, geez, I like working with you, but I certainly love the income from seeing you. You know what I mean? I'd rather you stayed here because you're one of my favorite people to work with, and it's nice having you as a client. A whole different thing would happen. But we don't do that as therapists. Very often what they do is you want to seem aloof, and what you want to do is make the patient wrong for ever making a decision or thinking about a decision that is not what the therapists think it should be. So let's talk about Bill Astwood, which is what I promised. So Bill Astwood decided to do this survey, and he did a survey among therapists, and he gave them some choice words. He gave them, I think, 100 words to rank order as words that they find that they would use as opposed to words that they would least likely to use, right? And he ranked order the words, and then he gave these patients the same 100 words to rank order. Then he went, and they so each therapist had a ranking order for their words, and each patient had a ranking order to their words. Then he went to the therapist, and he said, which of these people are getting better and which are not getting better? And the therapist rated them as to which are getting better and which are not getting better. Do you know which the therapist chose were the patients getting better? They chose the ones who used the vocabulary closest to theirs, meaning that if the patient learns to speak the way the therapist does, the therapist perceives them as getting better. You're talking my language, therefore you must be healthier. That was a brilliant study, and it was like it kind of proved some of the fallacy of the work that we all do, you know, that we do as therapists. So what is therapy? What is it supposed to do? I think the biggest thing about therapy is that you change your mind about who's trustworthy and who's not. I think the main thing about therapy is that people don't trust anybody. And they tend not to trust. And they have to find somebody who they can trust. How do you find somebody you can trust? Somebody who understands you, who is not sucked in, who doesn't go beyond boundaries, but somebody who is there who says, I got it, this is who you are. So there is more value in saying to an abstract sequential, oh yeah, it's very tough for you when you're faced with decisions. Oh, that's one of the worst things that could happen to you. It makes you crazy, doesn't it? That's tremendous. Or to go to somebody who's a concrete sequential. Concrete, they have to line up all the ducks. And the person's looking at it and said, you know, I understand, boy, you just couldn't leave that room. until you organized all of it, because your mind was working very heavily on organizing. And when you see things disorganized, you feel very bad. I fully understand that. Now, when you talk to people that way, and you talk to people about understanding them, you know, they get it. But you can't interpret to them. You can't go to them and say, because when you were a child, this happened to you, and that, so on and so forth. I mean, you can, but the thing that gets a person to trust you is when you're walking with them in the very same place, and they could feel you're walking with them. Now, what does that do for you? Why is trust important? You have a best friend, you have a sister, you have a brother you trust? No. You need somebody on the outside who is not invested in you, who is not attached to you, who can help you mirror yourself compassionately. That's curative. By curative, I mean it kind of heals a wound that's open. If you've never trusted your mother, if you never trusted your father, really, unless they approved of you, you know, unless they were really gave you the right approval, all of that stuff, if you could find one human in life who you can trust, that's a huge beginning of a healing. Now, that begins it. And then there's a second task to this, is the therapist must be trustworthy, which is very difficult for therapists to be trustworthy. Because, you know, they don't want to get too involved. You don't want to get over-involved. But you have to be worthy of the trust. Because therapists themselves are generally isolated and they don't have that many friends. You know? So it's like it's an interesting catch-22. But what we're trying to do with clients, and one of the things we want to do with clients, is to help them by being there for them, by being not only compassionate, but by walking with them and feeling what they feel. You don't have to feel the same thing, but you can understand what they feel, understanding what they think, appreciating it. Now, if you get somebody who's obese who says, I couldn't help it, I had to eat the old pizza. You know, you can't be saying to them, well, you know, but you got to limit yourself to one slice. But if you were to say and say, sure, it's amazing when you get a whole pizza to eat, isn't it? What would it take to just have one slice? What would it take? You know, what do you have to do? It's a whole different story. Or if you find somebody who smokes who doesn't want to smoke cigarettes. Oh, man, smoking is wonderful. It's such a good feeling when you're used to it. That goes down. It soothes you so much. It takes all your anger away. And then when you're done with it, you can throw it in the street, and there's not many people like that. Of course you love smoking. Of course. Is there any way that you can imagine ever doing that some other way? You know, maybe not. So that's basically what the approach is, and I think that's the approach to therapy that I know you take, and the approach that I take, and that's the approach that I'm hoping other therapists would find their way to.
I agree completely. I think that sometimes I feel like it almost doesn't matter what we talk about. I'm sitting with someone, we're connected. I sometimes describe it as bearing witness, to be with somebody when they're talking about something important to them, to be listening, to care, to be consistent, to be there week after week is an amazing experience to have, and unfortunately an experience that I think we don't have enough as human beings. So therapists provide a very important presence, and for the person themselves too, to be present in their own life with another human being is a very powerful experience.
So Lisa, you're saying something very, very important here. And of course, there are catchphrases we have, like witness to and all of that stuff. Yes, being with someone and really being with them and really feeling their presence and them feeling your presence is almost essential. It's so beautiful. They should look forward to seeing you. when a person walks out of a therapy room, they should smile. They should feel like they've just gotten the nicest thing. Not just hugs and kisses, but they have to feel like, for a moment there, I had a relief from myself because I found a place where I could feel safe. And they should look forward to the next session with you, looking forward to it like it is the best day, the best way I could spend an hour would be to be with my friend Lisa. So I can imagine that. I can imagine people just looking forward to, they sit in the waiting room and they're waiting for that clock to strike and they want to know that they can get to see you, which is why we have such an insistence that our therapists are never late with the clients. You know, boy, that person is sitting out there waiting for you. You know, you get there on time, you get to be with them. So I agree with you. I agree. It's like the essence of it is magnificent. It's a wonderful thing.
It's a privilege to be part of.
So when we have something, there becomes a question that I ask all patients who come in after they've seen other therapists. Once I see that they have seen other therapists, I ask them a question. And the question is, how did your last therapist betray you? Now, that's a funny question. Because first I'll look and I'll see, they saw John Skelton, you know, who was I'm making that name up. And as the time goes by, as we're talking, I'll say, and how did John Skelton betray you? And they'll say to me, betray me? No. And then they'll go into it. Well, I remember when I said to him I was going back to my boyfriend, he said, what are you, crazy? What are you doing? Something like that. And I never went back. So there is a thing, there is a betrayal that is potential, that is such a difficult thing because patients, they try so hard. And if they get to the point of trusting, and then they're looking to perceive this betrayal, you may not even do it. They're looking for a way out of this. Now, maybe you could get this with your best friends. Maybe you could get this with your buddies. Maybe you could get this with your pals. And I think you can. And I think most therapists probably aren't worth their salt. You know, they're not. They don't know how to do it. They don't know what they're doing. But the ones that are there, the ones who are really there, they really make a curative distance. Difference. Because in your mind, when you finally trust someone, some part of your brain begins to heal. And a part of you begins to feel like, you know, well, it's okay. I'm okay. And you begin to relax into your real self. And that's the most work that we could do.
I think also I'm okay and I'm not alone, which I feel is a fear that all of us carry. Am I all alone? Does anyone understand me? Can someone be with me in all the terrible parts of myself and the happy parts of myself too? It's confusing that it's so rare, but the truth is that it is rare. We're all walking around in our own heads, looking down, trying to get where we're going. And, you know, making eye contact and being somewhere where you're not alone is a powerful experience.
Yeah. So I thank you very much, Lisa, for sharing this with me.
Thank you.
This is a good idea. We will get this out to people. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind with Lisa Arnone. We are doing this as phase two, part two, of our classroom on the air, our classroom supervision about the nature of psychotherapy and styles of thinking. We will be back with you shortly, my friends. We'll be back with you shortly with more great stuff.